I'm G.
I'm KS.
I'm Aloysius.
And you're in this thing called
Young Fathers.
Now, let's do this for kicks. Is this like, we have to do this today because this is really important. Is this a collective? Is it a band? Is it a burrito? What do you?
We are, yeah, we are whatever we make it at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a family.
So you don't really define it as a band per se.
No, it's not like some kind of project or art collective. We've been together since we were very young boys, so we're brothers really, and we behave like that. It's just we make music as well, you know what I mean? Like the music's always been the reason why we've stuck together, because they are three different personalities. We're three different people. We don't see eye to eye on everything, but that's kind of the reason why it works in such a way, because you kind of take that into consideration that you don't agree, but you have to make it work somehow, and therefore by not being like-minded, then it makes it exciting.
Listen to them back there. They're already trying to figure out where to put stuff. Where to put cassettes. I mean, there you go. So I'm going to rattle off a whole thing. Let's see. What have we got going? So age 14, we talked about that. The Mercury Prize. I'm saying this funny. You're definitely into mind-altering everybody. That's your anti-quote. You actually were quoted somewhere as saying that that's exactly what music, you know, everybody says music has to do, and in the end, you know, that's not really, people have to come to it, you know, their own way. If you were pure hip-hop, you'd have a friggin' DJ, and the DJ would be doing what the DJ does. So let's go down that road, and let's explain this to people, because in all of these conversations that I've seen you have, nobody asks you. They just say, oh, well, you're not hip-hop, so you da-da-da. But they don't talk about the fact that you're playing this music and that you've spent the time to come up with these sounds.
Based on what we look like most of the time. How we look, you know, and there's, you know, there's two black guys and a white guy, and that's what it, you know, that's it. That's it. No, but that's what it is, you know, that's why that's you know, so they use hip hop as a reference to say, well, yeah, there's two black guys and a white guy.
Let's talk about the sound. So as a result of the fact that there's two black guys in the band, Therefore, you didn't make any original music here either.
I beat Sear all the time, so when they look at you, they're like, right, so they rap. There's a rap band, so that's automatically hip hop. But then they know it's not hip hop, but they can't say that. But it's just the easiest way to package something, and it's frustrating. It's injustice, you know, because it's not fair. It's not right to say that, because it turns people off, you know, because you have all the associations that you have with hip hop and what that means, and, you know, so we're battling against that. So that's why we say, you know, fall under rock and pop, because that's us taking the reins and putting that forward and saying, no, put us in here, in this realm, because it's closer to what we're doing, you know. And
I'm going to tell you the reversal. Being a white guy, not only just a white guy, but a white guy of age and a Jewish boy from New York, right, who sees all sorts of injustice against, you know, and I'm not religious, but I can't tell you on a daily basis how many people come up to me and say, so do you like hip hop? And I'm like, you're asking me because I'm a white guy. Do I like hip hop? Now, there's a role reversal for you that you wouldn't think about, right? Mm-hmm. And I say, okay. Here we go. You're asking the wrong person. Define hip-hop. What sounds do you define, and do you at all, as sounds that suddenly become things that become Young Fathers sounds? Are there certain things that you say, yep, that is a sound for us? Are there things you think about?
I think the most defining thing about our sound is our voices. I think because the production will always shift and move, and the rhythms and where we want to go with the kind of spectrum of sounds will always change, and that's us. But our voices will always be there and be.
That's the way it used to be.
Yeah, and the voices together and the voices individually is what keeps us going. It keeps the song exciting as well, because we can use our voices in loads of different ways. So I would say our sound isn't really definitive of our production sound. I would say it's rather than, it's just our voices, it's just us and what we say and how we use it.
Yeah, I heard somebody say Sly Stone, who's from here obviously, And there's the perfect example. Everybody is a star is not everyday people is not I want to take you higher. You know, these are completely different sounds, but what it did have is his voice, the amazing female vocals that they had. But you went out of your way to go to Berlin and still pick a basement and not pick, and right? So it's kind of like...
Well, we never picked it.
Right, but what I'm saying is, that you didn't say, oh, we're going to go to Berlin and we're going to record where Kraftwerk recorded or whatever.
Because it was just a place to get away from the place we usually are. To get out of that, the comfort zone, and right. That and Berlin was, I mean, obviously you know the great albums that have been made there and the people that have went there, but that was a long time ago. That really doesn't really have anything to do with it or do with us. I think we just wanted to go there and basically have a place where we didn't even have, you know, close friends or family to be a distraction. Even though that sounds horrible, sometimes you just really need to get the work done, and then we achieved that. So.
Okay, so I'm a guy who has done a lot of marketing. I ran an ad agency for 15 years. I am the king of focus groups. But I'm on the creative side, right, as a writer. I'm not the research guy. But what I read about the way that you were talking to people, and it's kind of glossed over. It's like about this deep. I want to hear a little bit more about what the meaning behind it was. Was it really that you wanted to research to see how far, and I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth here, okay. Was it that you wanted to see how far you could push it? Did you want to see what people were going to say? Or did you want to, and it could be any of these things, or did you want to get input that then you could put into the music? And I'm willing to bet it's all of those.
Yeah, it's a mixture of all those things, but it was an experiment for us, and the main one out of what you said, I think, was to push ourselves to put ourselves in a place where we felt very uncomfortable and was unfamiliar.
And that's amazing, because you push yourselves already, so now getting other people to help you push yourself more is really probably very surprising, because people probably have a perception that you guys are just so darn radical, you know.
What we do is self-contained. It's, you know, we have everything, do everything ourselves, you know, and to allow other people in when it's not finished. Now that's really hard, and it was a test for us to try and see and try and understand music, and not be so precious about it, even though it means a lot to us. It's trying to have that mind and say it's not precious, you know. It's putting it into a perspective where it's like, this is kind of a work in progress, you know, and we want to see how we feel. And then it felt horrible, you know, letting people hear something that isn't finished. You know, we can hear all the bits. That needs to be done, maybe, or maybe the sound is a bit too.
But they don't know.
They just hear. So that's you know, we get the luxury of that. But at the same time, it's just like to sit in a room where people are doing that, listening to us, listening to a couple of new songs. That, you know, it felt a bit weird. Uncomfortable is the best word. And then I think it made them feel uncomfortable, because we approached it the whole quality control style, where, you know, they were interviewers, journalists, and we had the camera on them, and we were filming them, and it was fun.
have you come up with plans to use that? Did you get them to sign releases?
No, we got them. We asked them. Was it five questions? It was five questions. Does this sound like a hit? Where would you hear this played? How fast will you be going when you listen to this? You know, what was it? So like five questions. I can't remember the two, but we got them to do that. And then they wrote that on a piece of paper, and then we collected it all. But we never used any of it. I think it was more about the process of that. That was the main focus, because after that you felt like, right, you know, it feels good to do that, and, you know, we opened ourselves up in a way that we haven't done.
But asking if this is going to be a hit, now, again, let's circle back to the beginning, and we're just going to keep a theme going here. Oh, my gosh, if you're, like, hip-hop and you're radical and whatever, how the hell could you possibly have a hit?
Well, I mean, it means more people hearing your stuff. You're putting yourself in a realm of everyday people, and I think that's our definition of a hit record. You know, loads of people listen to your record, you know, and whether they like it or not, they're hearing it, you know, on a daily basis.
So I'm going to just circle back because, you see, we're in America here, and we don't give a flying leap about the Mercury Prize, right? And what's interesting, though, is somebody who is an Anglophile, right? Somebody who follows all these things. You know, I get emails all the time, and it's like, the band won the Mercury Prize. And I say, okay, is the music any good? Who were the, quote, the ones to win, the hit makers? Who were the ones that supposedly were, who did you blow out of the water that people then said, how is this possible?
I don't know. I think there was names that were, like, older people who have been, like, kind of making music for a bit, and someone who has, like, a bigger following or stuff like that. So
it's more money behind them.
Yeah, and more money behind them as well. So, like, the expectation for that, and just because there's more people who have had their heirs, okay, so there should be the winners just because of that. But I didn't really...
So what the heck happened? How did you actually slip through... And what actually happened this year that the judges, you know, in that year, the judges actually managed to go, oh, wait a minute. The whole idea here is to introduce new music.
Regardless of if it's new, it's just good. I think that's like, that's the...
Quality, yeah.
It was just a good, especially because it's a panel. To win over a panel of people who have a kind of broad... spectrum of music that they like or but that they're into, and I mean it's a good thing to win because it's kind of respectful, and we always believed that we deserved it as well, so we felt like it was right because there is obviously you expect it to go these things like awards. You always wonder how what's the politics behind it. You know, whoever wins, is it really because it's because of some kind of deal that's been set up, you know what I mean? Like, I think that happens sometimes. But for us to win, who kind of an unknown band, to win it, and I think just win it off, you know, an album that we made our own. Like, we made it on our own back, our own minds. We recorded, wrote, mixed, mastered, done the artwork, done everything, done the videos for it, and for people to actually get behind it. I think that's just, it was right, and so we were happy to win it because we felt like we should win it. We might not have thought that we were going to win it because of politics, but that's what we say. Like, the award show doesn't tell us anything that we don't already know. We're confident. So.
And were you comfortable there? Were you comfortable at the award show?
But that's kind of like that. Basically, all we wanted to do was perform because it was live on the TV. So the award, if we won the award, that wasn't really important. All we wanted to do was get on people's TVs. And so we went up there, and you're playing in front of a bunch of people, industry folk. But sometimes that's the best crowd to play in front of because it's easy to be angry. It's easy to get in people's faces. It's easy to get riled up because you feel like.
These people are the people that sit in the back of the room with their hands folded.
And it's easier to play that kind of crowd sometimes.
I love this quote. The people that don't want to hear us are the ones we want to play to the most. I love that quote. So, radio, America, different, right?
Difficult.
What track do you think I played first? And what track do you think that I, from the new album? That's right. Amazingly, I just tracked it really fast. I had about an hour before I was recording my show, and I said, you know what? I can play that instantaneously with everything. And then I just went back and read the story behind it. And I was like, really? Interesting missed opportunity, right?
Yeah.
But it's really fascinating. And again, tell me if the tale is right, that you were commissioned to write that track, and then they didn't use it, but... Now, tell me if the story's right. Did you take the commission because you saw the opportunity after taking the commission?
It was like a proposal.
Yeah.
First thing, what happened was a proposal that was sent to us, and we thought about it. Our immediate reaction was to refuse because of the company and the brand that was associated with it. But then we came amongst ourselves and said, well, what are we doing music for? Like, we have this opportunity to at least say something and then have, and the money was good that they were going to offer us. So we were going to use that as a billboard to promote that, to
highlight, you know, the issues and stuff. And so it's a win-win. We, you know, you get to write a song and
Nestle is a company who's done some horrific things, and so we wanted to make sure that's why the first reaction was like, no, we're not doing that. They can, you know.
But that was easy. That would have been too easy. That would be an easy option for us to just say, nah, we're not doing it. But when you have that opportunity, and the Nestle thing hit home for me anyway, in Nigeria, my mom's sister, she's a nurse, and she works there, and she's still dealing, like, till today, like, with kids who have had defects from the promotion that they've had back in Nigeria from the advert saying that powdered milk is better than breast milk. So it's completely ridiculous. So
it's still happening now in parts of Asia as well. Yeah. So, like, that's why we wanted to use the money to put billboards up. It's one of those things, it's like, it's a shame it never happened, but, I mean, we still get to talk to you and tell you what we were trying to do.
I don't know, like, because, you know, feed me mama, baby, baby, baby. Yeah, you know, hey, mister, we really did it wrong, sister. You know, it's like, I don't know. It was astonishing. It was incredible that they missed it. And, you know, they came back saying, we love it, you know, but I think they just say that anyway, but we love it. If we try it like this and change it, and I think if we changed it, you know, the parts that they requested, it wouldn't have sounded how it sounded. And we still love to write songs. It's all about the songs as well. And I think that then the message would have been missing from the songs, because it would have been diluted or just,
it wasn't worth it, so it wasn't worth it, diluted, lost.
You know, so it's just like, nah.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside is the bread. But then in between, I play solid music, no jingles, no interruptions. But the whole idea here is that we put your stuff on the outside, and this is not a playlist. There's no rule. I can play anything.